Hello and welcome to Newspeak. I'm Peter Whittle. As usual, very pleased to be joined by our senior fellow Rafe Haider-Mancur, historian, royal commentator, and Amy Gallagher of Stand Up to Woke and also the STP's candidate for the London mayoralty. Before we talk about the week's events and news, just one notice here. We have one of our locals events, this time in London. We've got a very good branch in London, and it's on this coming Wednesday in the evening, March the 6th. Now, we've had a great response to this. Only a few places left to come along, but if you would like to, it's worth a try. Best thing to do is to write to locals@newcultureforum.org.uk. We have a speaker there. In fact, it's Amy. Amy, you're going to be speaking. What are you going to be talking about?
Oh,
or haven't you even thought yet?
I have thought a little bit. So I'm going to be talking about London. Obviously, London is the place where we are experiencing the most kind of politicisation everywhere. Yeah. And we're feeling it more sharply than anyone else. Okay. Obviously, your documentary did well. It obviously spoke to people about the decline in London and the pro-Palestinian riots and the atmosphere more generally, and how we can push back and what we can do and what NCF are doing and what other smaller political parties are doing. So I'll be talking a little bit along those lines.
Right. And you'll be there as well, won't you, Rafe? And indeed, Philip Kisley hopefully will be there too. So that is actually on Wednesday, 6th of March. Do get in quick because it's filling up. Obviously, there's one topic that's dominated this week. This time last week, actually, we were talking about one thing, and that was about the threat of Islamism and the various dangers to our parliamentary procedures, and indeed the growth in intimidation, which is happening, has been happening all over the country at local events, and indeed actually in the by-election this week, just before it, we actually had the Reform candidate receiving death threats. So it's been a very worrying time. However, here we are a week later, and by magic, almost, the whole issue has changed to one of Islamophobia. Rafe, starting with you, this is down to obviously what one man said, or rather, should I say, it was used and just basically grabbed with both hands, wasn't it? Lee Anson talking specifically about Sadiq Khan and, quote, his mates are in control of London, something like that. Do you think that actually the, apart from the distracting element, which I think is a very strong point there, do you think it's also that it's because he mentioned Khan by name that this has caused such a fuss?
I think so. I mean, even people in his own party, of course, the One Nation Tories, think that by bringing in a person into the discussion, that went a step too far. But it's always the case, isn't it, that whenever Islamism raises its ugly head, the British establishment immediately seek to deflect attention away from that. Yeah. And I sort of wish people like Lee Anson and others, in a way, would actually be more careful with their speech in the immediate aftermath, because the Labour Party and the BBC and others are just desperate to find anything which they can suddenly make an alternative news story. And here we are, even on, you know, on this show, everywhere, talking about Lee Anson and Islamophobia, when we should be talking about the real issue, which is the threat of Islamism to our democracy. We've had, you know, MPs having their lives threatened, and yet we're talking about essentially a Westminster bubble issue about what one lone MP said. And of course, it was also just a few days ago that the Speaker himself, the very man who bowed down to Islamism and changed parliamentary procedure out of an alleged concern for Labour MPs' death threats on Muslims, he then went on to talk about far-right extremism being the real issue at play here, not Islamic extremism, as if the huge furore which he enveloped himself was meant nothing at all. I mean, it's clear to anybody what's going on here, and we need to call it out when we see it. And now, of course, everyone is discussing Islamophobia. And even on the Daily Politics show on BBC yesterday, Baroness Kennedy and others were accusing Lee Anderson of racism. Islamophobia is not racism, for one. Christianity is not a race. Islam is not a race. And the second point is Islamophobia is a completely nonsense term that needs to be expunged from all of our vocabularies. It was coined by the Muslim Brotherhood, a proscribed terrorist organization of extremists. It was then brought into mainstream discussion by Trevor Phillips and the Runnymede Trust in the 1990s. And it is an insidious threat to free speech because it essentially conflates criticism of Islam with anti-Muslim hatred. We should be talking about anti-Muslim hatred. Mm-hmm. Lee Anderson has been accused of being Islamophobic, not for anti-Muslim hatred, but for raising genuine concerns about the rise of Islamic extremism.
I think the thing is that the point there, really, in a way, is that what he said was no more radical than, in fact, I'd say a bit less than what Suella Braverman said about the country generally. The difference was that she kept it vague, if you know what I mean. She didn't specifically talk about city council. I would have to say that, you know, Lee Anderson has actually acquitted himself pretty well, I think, since I've seen him in interviews. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, whatever you think of him, he has not, so far anyway, apologized. And this has got to be the most important part. Stop apologizing, I'd say. But I mean, this point about Islamophobia that Rafe raises there, there is actually a new definition. It's a few years old now, but it specifically says it's racist. This is the one that the Labour Party has actually adopted, which therefore will probably be in our law.
Yeah, well, Sadiq Khan has already come out and said that Lee Anderson's statement was racist. Mm. All Lee Anderson said was that Sadiq Khan is looking after his mates. And I think we've had a complete overreaction to this. Most people agree that Sadiq Khan seems to have a double standards when it comes to talking about certain groups, and that these pro-Palestinian riots that are happening every weekend, which are very overtly anti-Semitic, he doesn't comment on them very much. Mm. There was recently a genocidal statement being projected onto the Big Ben monument. To the river, to the sea, and he hasn't even condemned that. Now, can you imagine if there was a far right slogan being projected onto a monument, or if there were far right protests every weekend? You know, he would come out and be condemning them as much as possible. Yeah. So to say that he exhibits favoritism towards certain groups, to me, that's just obvious. So yeah. I agree with Lee Anderson, and I'm really angry, actually, at the overall response. I expect the left to go crazy in response to Lee Anderson. But what has annoyed me is actually there are lots of conservative established GB News, The Spectator, various others that have absolutely turned on Lee Anderson and tried to completely disown themselves from him as much as possible. And what they are feeding into is this idea that the left can say anything, but the right have to be absolutely perfect. They cannot say anything that could be considered to be slightly politically incorrect. And if they do, they have to be disowned and got rid of. Yeah. And that is what has really annoyed me about all of this. And all the people saying, oh, Lee Anderson shouldn't have said it because then all the attention's on him and it raises Islamophobia. But it's the whole thing of that we are feeding into this idea that we have to, that our side has to be absolutely perfect and we can't express any anger or upset at Sadiq Khan or his favouritism or anything.
The thing is, you see, is that, you know, not being able to express anything, notionally, at the moment, even though Islamophobia exists, we are, you know, notionally we are. But this new definition, I'm sorry to go on about this, this is the one that all parties except for the Tory party have accepted. Although actually the Tory party will probably go along with it, if you know what I mean. But it will be embedded in new legislation. It says that anything is Islamophobia is about Muslimness or perceived Muslimness. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that, for example, if you don't believe that the burqa should be allowed, that automatically, therefore, that's not allowed?
This is so dangerous. So yes, you're right. Every single parliamentary party, apart from the Conservative Party, has signed up to this. The Labour Party expects currently all of its councils across the country to abide by this definition of Islamophobia. And all it takes is one person to perceive something that we say on this channel or on the street, to perceive that as being Islamophobic, for it to actually potentially fall foul of being Islamophobic and become a criminal offence. That includes things like if you criticise polygamy, the Muslim practice of polygamy, that could be now. You know, it may even apply to criticism of Muslim grooming gangs and the way we talk about that sort of a subject. This is an extremely chilling threat to free speech. We've been lucky so far because the Conservatives have been in power, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the Labour Party is so dependent upon the Muslim vote, and Muslims are disaffected now because of the Labour Party's stance on Gaza. As a result, when Labour comes into power, it's almost certain that they're going to try their very best to appease the Muslim vote. And one of the ways they're going to do that, we know, is they're by introducing this either as standalone legislation or by incorporating it into its new race equality bill, which said it's going to be coming out with. And this is coming down the line, and we should all be very afraid about this because it's going to have a chilling effect on free speech.
Do you think, though, you know, this point about this distracting story, for example, Sir David Amess, when he was murdered, we talked about this, I think, last week. You know, there was this distraction. Oh, they talked about social media instead. The far right thing is this kind of phony bogeyman. Going way back now, I remember on the London Assembly, Cressida Digg, quite clear, this is our main threat. When you actually scrutinize it, it was kind of highly theoretical, you know? And the fact is, what is it, something like 90% of people who are on the kind of watch list, the services, the security services watch list, is Islamists. No question about it. Do you think people surely have seen what's going on now in terms of this kind of, you know, dead cat thing, this distracting thing? It's so blatant now, isn't it?
Well, what's going to happen is that this new Islamophobia idea is going to, it's going to mean that even organisations like Prevent can't function properly, because how can you contact Prevent and say you're worried about some kind of Islamic extremism when you're not supposed to comment on it and you're worried that you might be Islamophobic? So it's going to mean that more and more we're increasingly unable to talk about this issue at a time when it's increasing and we need to talk about it more. And as you said, it's Islamophobia. As Lee Anderson has said, it's essentially a blasphemy law. Islam isn't a person, it's a set of ideas. And to say that you're phobic of it, that you have an irrational fear of it, I am fearful of Islamic extremism, but it's not irrational. It's based on the fact that people go around slaughtering people and bombing people and murdering people in the name of this extreme religion. And it's going to make it harder and harder for people to disagree with it. We're already seeing that now, that people having to apologise for just mild statements about what they're seeing.
I think the problem as well is that the huge amount of self-censorship, it's internalised.
Yeah.
You know, so consequently, I mean, I don't think there's any part of society which has not internalised this. I mean, the best way most people deal with it, I think, is say, I'm not quite sure what I can and cannot say, so I'll say nothing. You know, and I think that is the real worry, isn't it?
It's absolutely the real worry. And that's the problem here, because no religion, no ideology, no way of life should be beyond criticism, you know? And there's no difference between Islam and Christianity, and yet, you know, people have no trouble at all criticizing the Catholic Church in the most strident sort of terms. It's no different to communism. Islam and communism, Christianity, these are, in one sense, ideologies, you know? And if we can criticize fascism and communism, we should be able to criticize Islam. And it's also the disconnect, though, between our political class and the public, because we know from all the polling that the public are overwhelmingly behind Lee Anderson on this. And yet you look at the elites, and once again you just see how completely out of touch they are, and they constantly seem to be pandering to a metropolitan elite viewpoint. And you think, what is the purpose of this? I mean, in another of the stories we're going to be discussing later as well, this applies, but I was looking at a few web articles which were clearly written with a metropolitan elite bias. And all of the comments underneath were contradicting the article itself. And you just think, do the journalists who write these articles not actually look at the comments underneath their pieces to realize that they're not actually writing for their audience?
And sometimes they even turn them off.
Yeah.
The comments, they turn them off. I mean, I think it's without question that this is a distraction. Also, it's a question of whether it's out of fear or whether it's out of a political view. Held by our media and held by our establishment. I tend to the latter. I think that it's actually that they feel that we are the oppressors. I mean, our media do, and that therefore, this is an oppressed minority. I don't quite know what it would take for them to wake up on that point. But on the same sort of, well, very much the same topic, is that Paul Scully, who's an MP, who was also, I think, Minister for London, opened his mouth this week and talked about no-go areas. Again, people are ready to leap on anything. And he was talking about no-go areas in our cities. I don't think he did specify Muslim no-go areas, but nevertheless, it became a bit about that. And now he's apologised, right? But I don't, why are people apologising? I do not know that, you know, they're not going to love you for it. But do you think there are no-go areas?
Well, there definitely are for Jews now. I mean, pretty much London is a whole no-go area for Jews. I know Jews that don't want to go out of into central London at the weekends or when there's pro-Palestinian riots. They're getting taxis rather than getting on public transport to avoid potential harassment or hate crimes. And there are across the country, I mean, Suella Braverman's talked about this, there are silos of groups that are operating at, you know, outside British values, where most other people wouldn't want to live because they have their whole community and they would feel excluded. It's well documented. Mm-hmm. There are places that are operating outside of British values, and there are, you know, is that the whole of London is becoming, there's loads of pockets in London where you wouldn't want to go to. I don't see that there's anything wrong with saying that. It's the failure of multiculturalism, isn't it, that we have seen.
What would you call a no-go area?
Well, no-go zones are very difficult to actually define. So Belgium has no-go zones. France has no-go zones with North African Muslims being the problem there. Britain is a far better place. For the average person, on a Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. or a Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. there are really no-go zones, and there aren't any no-go zones really in this country. If you're an Orthodox Jew, or you're a Jew with a visible Jew, or if you're a homosexual couple, there definitely are no-go zones 24 hours a day. But even for the average person in this country, you know, there are certain parts of this country where if you're there at 11 p.m. on a Friday night, for example, you would be looking over your shoulder. And we know what white men are, can't go to certain areas in the Midlands, in the north of England, for example. They know that they're not welcome in those areas, probably at any time of day, actually. These things do exist, and it's something which actually we need to pay more attention to, because they're only getting bigger with segregation. I saw a video on Twitter just the other day of two traffic wardens being assaulted by a mob in one of these sort of very high densely populated ethnic segregated communities. You know, if you're two policemen walking together, you will be very wary about going down a certain street. That's one of the definitions of no-go zones, is where policemen just would never leave their cars. And we're actually frequently seeing now police vans being attacked, police being sworn at and told to get back into your vehicles. There is a culture of intimidation. If that isn't a no-go zone, well, actually, I think it is.
I think the thing is, it is a difficult one, because it's open, you know, there's loads of hostages to fortune if you bring it up, because it's so easy to sort of disprove, in a way. You just take your reporter from The Guardian and you walk around in Tower Hamlets for a while, and she comes back saying, I didn't see any problem, and I'm a woman, blah, blah, blah. You can almost hear it now. I don't know what I feel about these. There've always been very dodgy areas that the police didn't go in, going right back to the 50s. You know, always dodgy areas that the police would go in couples. I'm not sure, would you say that there are, and you say London is a no-go zone in total for Jewish people, I think you're absolutely, it's not hyperbole, it absolutely is. But when I think of no-go zones or areas, I think of sort of almost contained anarchy, i.e. that when you go into them, you're taking your life in your hands. Would you say that's what it is?
Yeah, there are places like that in London that have become like that. There's certainly, when I was doing shift work as a nurse, I tried to avoid walking through Brixton or places like that, because there were so much crime rates, and you'd come out and you'd see things immediately that were really, you felt like you were in danger.
Yeah.
So it's about crime. But I mean, the media have seized on this comment by this MP and made it about race and racism, and saying, well, who are you saying is not allowed to go into certain zones, and why, you know, what race are you talking about? There are lots of places that you wouldn't go to for reasons to do with crime, but there are also places that you would certain groups wouldn't go to because of fears that they would be attacked. And you know, there doesn't seem to be an idea that, you know, that any concern for Jewish people or other groups that would feel that they can't go into a certain area for fear of being attacked. That the concern seems to me more that you're accusing those groups of being racist or being, you know, of committing hate crimes, but the statistics are there. I mean, we've seen since the October attacks on Israel, there's been over 30 attacks on Jewish property. Jewish hate crimes have risen by over 1,000%. So we know this is happening. And I know Jewish people are saying, you know, should we leave London? What should we do? Where are we going to, what does our future look like? So it is happening.
Mm. And let's just remember, we had clear no-go zones in Northern Ireland, didn't we, in Belfast, between Republicans and Loyalists, right? And it doesn't take that much of a stretch of imagination to see segregated communities in London and elsewhere growing to such a size where they become sort of Islamic, you know, type of enclaves. And remember, we've already had an experience of that in Tower Hamlets, which is, you know, one of the top 10 most crime-ridden parts of the country. Where we had the Muslim patrol, this Muslim Sharia law gang going around beating up Muslim store owners who were selling alcohol, for example, putting up, attacking homosexuals, attacking poorly women who were dressed in scantily clad clothes and so forth, putting up stickers saying homosexuals can't come here, this is a Sharia zone. I mean, that is a foretaste of what's to come if people don't actually actively tackle the problem of extremism.
Well, I was there actually in the East End last night driving through Limehouse. And there were some very, you know, famous gay bars, the White Swan, which is where Michael Barrymore came out. Not exactly a thing to recommend it, maybe, but anyway. They're all gone. But you look at it and you think, this is because this is now essentially a Muslim area. But then a little bit of you is saying, well, wait a minute, they've closed all over the place because they are closing, you know, so don't get carried away. But I think that I'd agree. I remember there was someone who became very involved in the NCF for a while, a choreographer with a ballet group, and he just got sick of being insulted on Brick Lane with his partner and moved out. I mean, people just sort of move out. The problem is they'll never say that's the reason. Mm. Most people will never say that's the reason. They'll just say quality of life or something or other, won't they?
This is the thing, you can't talk about it, but we know privately people are having these conversations. Where are we going to live in the future? Where's the best? You know, everybody's saying it. You know, do you see yourself living in London in the next 5 years, 10 years? Are you going to move out? What are we going to do? But we can't talk about it, so it will just happen. People will just move. And
they're doing that. Going back to our, you know, previous part of this discussion, Kemi Badenoch put a few words into it, didn't she, this week, talking about how we should best define, you know, sort of prejudice or bigotry towards Muslims, didn't she? And I think it was something about using the word, actually, you've tweeted on this as well, haven't you? Anti-Muslim, you use the word anti-Muslim.
Yeah, no individual should be targeted because of their faith. Yeah. I mean, everyone deserves the common courtesy unless they're in breach of the law themselves. But we should treat everybody with respect. So there's a huge difference between hating an individual because of their faith and despising or criticizing the ideology. And even, you know, even if somebody is, you know, holds extreme views of any faith, they don't deserve to be physically attacked or assaulted or verbally shouted on the street. But that doesn't mean that we can't actually criticize Muhammad or Islam or its beliefs or its practices and values and culture.
Mm. Well, you see, I'm kind of a real purist on this in the sense that when we have the news, radio news, TV news, whatever, it is always the Prophet Muhammad, right? It is always, that is how it's always described. And you, I feel like, is he your prophet?
You know, to I've the never news said stars? It. I've never
no,
said
you
it.
Might not. But on, I'd say, I think you'd agree that on our media.
Yes.
And you sort of think, wait a minute, you know, why do you not even just simply say the Islamic prophet Muhammad? Why is it the prophet Muhammad? It's like every time that they talk about Jesus, they should have to say the son of God or something. It's utterly ridiculous. But it's so internalized now, you know. And it's the people who are sort of virulently secularist and liberal who for some reason get very angry on behalf of Muslims.
Yeah, and it's just this one religion that you can't criticize. we have a strong tradition in this country of making fun of Christianity. You know, the Life of Brian, the Book of Mormon theatre show, Ricky Gervais, Ben Elton, they all make fun of Christianity. And even Christians just understand that that's fair game, you know, that we live in a liberal society, and of course you can make fun of Christianity. But that doesn't apply to Islam. You don't see any of comedians or any works of art or theatre shows making fun of Islam. And it's because, that's of right. course, you know that they, well, their lives would be at risk, first
well,
and
they
foremost.
They follow through. They follow yes. through on yeah. the threats. It's as simple yeah. as that. You're not going to have the life of Iqbal.
No.
You know, anytime soon. Just to wrap this part up, here we are, we've kind of moved right over, and here we are doing it, as you rightly say, talking about Islamophobia. When do you think actually that this issue, or how will it be pulled back to what it really should be, which is about the Islamist threat to our, which I see is intensifying every week, you know? How will that be pulled back? How will we get it back? How will we get that back online?
It would only happen if our own media outlets, from GB News to The Telegraph, to The Spectator and so forth, don't fall for the metropolitan elite line and keep the focus. And if Tory MPs don't apologise, if they stand their ground, if they don't lose the whip, if actually the Prime Minister had some gut and spine and actually stood up and said, you know what, Islamophobia is a nonsense term. We're going to get rid of it, and we're going to bring and say anti-Muslim hatred is a correct term. Everyone should be free to criticise any religion. That's what should have been said on the steps of Downing Street, instead of removing the whip from Lee Anderson and sort of making this mealy-mouthed apology.
Yes, and also getting entirely the wrong end of the stick by Sunak saying, I'm living proof that we're not a racist society. Sort of, it's not really banal sentiment. I mean,
he's also conceding the argument.
Exactly, exactly, conceding it entirely. Slightly different subject, but J.K. Rowling has been, well, expressing her exasperation this week, hasn't she? Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so there's a recent story of a man who's been convicted of murder. It's been found to have a kind of quite extreme instances of torture in his background, torturing a cat, putting a cat in a blender, but then eventually going on to murder a man. Mm. And this has been presented by mainstream media as a woman. So this is a man who has he's gotten through what says he's transgender. He was actually treated at the Tavistock Clinic. And was on puberty blockers, which we know can alter your mood. But he's a transgender man, a man that says he's a woman and wants to identify as a woman. But the media have been talking about this person as though they are a woman. Yeah. They're no longer even saying trans woman or a man who identifies as a woman. There was a clip of a BBC presenter saying a woman has been convicted of murder.
I saw that.
And you know, as though, and that's it, no explanation that they're even transgender. So this is kind of even going even one step further in just accepting that how they identify is the new reality. And of course, in response to this, a lot of feminists and gender critical people have come out and said, what's going on? J.K. Rowling spoke up about this. She tweeted about the fact that, you know, men are committing these crimes and women are being blamed for it because they're saying, oh, it's a woman that's done this crime, or of course it's not, it's a man. And this is very important because we know that, you know, 99% of sexual offences are committed by men and 90% of victims of sexual offences are women. Mm. So it's a very important issue to do with gender and sex differences. And the reaction to feminists like J.K. Rowling to just speak up about this has been quite remarkable. The Metro made a tweet saying that J.K. Rowling needs to shut her mouth, you know, and keep quiet. So we have a mainstream media that are defending a man who has committed murder and telling people like J.K. Rowling, a beloved author, to shut her mouth. I mean,
she said something, I'm sick of this shit, didn't she?
Yes. And that's the remarkable thing, you know, once again, just as it is with deflecting onto Lee Anderson and Islamophobia, here the deflection is away from the trans issue onto transphobia once again, you know. And the actual article in the Metro, I read the actual online article, and every comment underneath that was defending J.K. Rowling, again showing the disconnect between the agenda setters and the rest of the public. But yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things going on here. Firstly, of course, you may remember there was a mass shooter in America recently, Audrey Hale,
yes.
who was a trans shooter. The moment that it was announced that she was trans, coverage of the story stopped. You can even find the date that it stopped, March the 23rd, 2023. It stopped because that was the date it was announced. Mm. Now, had it been a white man who had a... She had a manifesto as well, this trans person. Had it been a white man with a manifesto, there would have been days and days of coverage of this. All coverage stopped on that very day. That's one of the reasons people are reluctant to announce that this person is trans, because they don't want to have a discussion about this connection with trans. Mm. But J.K. Rowling is quite right. If you're suddenly going to be including in crime statistics trans people as women, you're going to completely skew the degree to which women actually commit crimes. Because, of course, as Amy said, you know, the vast majority of people committing these things are actually men. Mm. Now, this trans killer, for example, also identifies as a cat and was microchipped as a cat and has a cat microchip and has a multiple personality disorder, refers to themselves as we and us and so forth. So why were they not addressed as a cat? Why were they addressed, you know, as a she or a he? Mm. I mean, it just goes, why did the judges decide that? And now there's this assumption that there's actually a code of ethics, there's a handbook in the court system that now says that you must address people by their preferred pronouns. Without actually any proof of a gender certificate, for example. Mm. So you get the bizarre case, for example, of a woman who's been raped having to refer to her rapist as a woman. I mean, we're getting into very, very distressing territory here.
Well, getting into sort of Soviet Russia territory, actually, where you can, in fact, you covered this in your documentary, Heresies, last week.
Yeah, I looked at the Tavistock.
It was kind of you could be guilty of reformism,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And actually put away. It's the same kind of thing, really, isn't it? This person, this cat woman, man, is actually going into a men's prison, though. Mm. Isn't that right?
Thankfully,
yeah.
And there's no rule that it had to happen that way, but at least that's to be... said that's one thing, but that just goes to show you know, that at least the courts are doing that, whereas the media still buy the line that he's a woman.
You know, I mean, it's extraordinary that actually it's considered a positive step that a bloke is actually going into a male prison. While we're on the subject, Amy, great documentary last week.
And
you know, it seems to have gone down very well. I mean, great. Heresies, still up, of course. This is YouTube, it's still up. What is it called again?
So it's called How Psychology Went Mad, Trans, Racist and Woke. So it's,
Look it out, okay. Thanks very much, Amy.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Rafe. We shall see you next week. Thanks, bye. Hello, if you're enjoying the New Culture Forum channel and you believe in our mission, may I invite you to join our membership scheme at the link below, or on our website, newcultureforum.org.uk. Our work is more important now than ever, and we have great plans ahead for the future, but we can't do it without your support. From as little as £3 per month, you can help ensure that we continue on our mission. As a member, you'll receive a range of benefits, including access to exclusive content, invitations to our private events, including here at our studios, free copies of our books, and much, much more, including, of course, our famous NCF mug. If you aren't able to become a member, then please help us by clicking this button and subscribing to our channel. It's completely free. Just remember to also click the bell icon so that you can get notifications when we post new videos. Thank you.